C1SP. Number 6B.
Then she goes on and says, but that this attainment comes gradually here or hereafter. Here she says that even the pious Polycarp said, I cannot turn at once from good to evil. Neither do other mortals accomplish a change from error to truth at the single bound. You see, she said, well, that, just as she has shown that, especially in Atonement and Eucharist, and then also in marriage, she has shown that really an understanding of reality does not come through mental activities, but it comes mostly through the experiences. That experiences is the big teacher, and only that we have learned something through experience, we really have understood those facts. And so, because she knows that, because she's aware of these circumstances, she says, and therefore that working out of spiritualism, we can't expect that we work it out in a single bound. It will take time because it takes experiences to work it out. But she shows then, as the subtone of truth, that all that is going on in the here and in the hereafter is that error destroys itself, that we don't have to destroy spiritualism, that we don't have to do. We don't have to fight spiritualism, not destroy spiritualism. But that in, you see, the Christ method, we are here in truth of truth, the Christ method is always that we hold up in consciousness the true sense of things, the true sense of the spiritual status of man, and in holding up and nurturing that and in supporting that spiritual status of man, that carries in itself the ability that error destroys itself. It is error's own self-destruction. And then she says, and that goes on until the last error is destroyed. Then, and not until then, she says only then, but not until then, will it be demonstrated that the second death has no power. You see, then the belief in spiritualism is destroyed in consciousness. Then when the last error is overcome, then the second death has no more power. The first death, I think, is the belief in birth, where we bury life in matter, and that's the first big death. Whereas afterwards, we bury the body into matter. The first death is where we bury life into matter. And the last death is where we begin to see that there was never life in matter. And therefore there is no need for resurrecting life out of matter. Well, we come closer and closer to the end of our time. But I will take now the last subject, love. See, at this point, Mrs. Eddy has shown, through the subject of truth, how by turning in consciousness to the eternal facts of being, to go to the Father and see that in life is always identified spiritually, and that those identities which are identified by life are eternal and indestructible, that by turning to that status we destroy in consciousness the belief in spiritualism, the belief that life is born and lives in matter. Having destroyed this, she gives now a resume in the last subject of love, by showing what was really at work behind the whole thing. In other words, she shows the plan of science and the plan of spiritualism, which was at work behind the whole first six subjects. And perhaps you just will notice when reading over this page and a half, how directly and indirectly, how literally and between the lines, she shows the absurdity of spiritualism. the absurdity of the reasoning in spiritualism. She doesn't say that the spiritualists are absurd. I think I only owe it to the spiritists that I read that last, one of the last paragraphs out of this chapter where she says, those individuals who adopt theosophy, spiritualism, or hypnotism may possess natures above some others who issue eschew their false beliefs. See, therefore my contest is not with the individual, but with the false system. So let's see that in our heart we don't ridicule the spiritists, but that in our heart we begin to learn how ridiculous it is that we are subject in our everyday thinking to spiritualistic beliefs. Just as we had seen before that in many ways we are so contradictory in our attitudes that that on one side we believe that life is eternal, and then we believe that we die. And on one side we believe that when we die we go into heaven, to a better world, we say, and then when somebody really goes to that better world, we mourn and weep and are sad. How in so many ways we take quite naturally, without that we are shocked, a completely absurd and contradictory attitude. And this is one point which is brought out here. She presents here spiritualism as of no advantage whatever, as not desirable really. She shows it as wretched, as hopeless, as hell, as a purgatory. She shows it here as something which is unnatural, a falsity, a deflection of mortal mind. She shows it here as unreasonable, absurd, as pernicious in tendency. These are all terms out of her context. She shows it as destructive, and lastly she shows it as a medley, where matter cares for matter, making gods many. Well, that's about, say, the nature of spiritualism. You see, anything but order. Anything but order. It is a medley. Well, how often do we say we are in a muddle? How often do we say that the circumstance and a situation is just one big muddle? Well, when we feel that something is one big muddle in our life, it is because we believe in spiritualism. If we would believe in spirit, spirit is order. And spirit is always ordered and remains ordered because order is an identity of being. Order is something which is unchangeable in existence. And therefore, the order of spirit has always gone on. And the order of spirit is something which is always identified as life. And that's the plane of love. The plane of love which she presents here says, whatever the spiritualistic belief may be, and however strongly and tenaciously we cling to this error of spiritualism, what is going on in reality is always that the plane of love is working out the order of spirit and is working it out definitely and eternally. Soul and life. It's working it out definitely and eternally. Just have a look when you are at home how indirectly and directly this absurdity, this hypothetical sense of spiritualism is laid bare. You have so many senses of if and what's and where and so on, which are all hypothetical. And usually she puts questions which she not even has to answer, because the question is put in such a way that the absurdity of the contradiction becomes so clear that one says to oneself, yes, how on earth can I ever believe in such a stupidity, in such an absurdity, that opposites are one? Well, by the very definition of opposites, we should discard spiritualism, which says opposites commingle. Well, if they commingle, they are not opposites, they are one. In this seventh subject, we not only see the hypothetical nature of spiritualism, but we also see the curse of spiritualism. We also see the wretchedness of its tendency, which is not the wretchedness of those who believe in spiritualism. Let's be clear about that. She says in somewhere also in, I think it's in Pulpit and Press or somewhere, I don't know where. I will find it for you. I think something very nice about, yes, Pulpit and Press, she says, the Christian Scientists do not accept the belief we call spiritualism and theosophy. Yet each of all these movements, however they may differ among themselves, are phases of idealism and manifestations of a higher spirituality seeking expression. See, we must see that those who investigate and confess to spiritualism or theosophy, that they are seekers for a higher idealism. And if the system is wrong, that doesn't say that these people are wretched. But the system must be seen as wretched, and it's wretched in tendency. And the effect, usually, of those who believe and practice spiritualism is usually the effect which are depicted here in this seventh subject, namely, it's usually a curse on them. They are like blighted buds afterwards. I don't know, I haven't seen many, many mediums, but those which I have been acquainted or have come into contact or have seen descriptions or always resemble blighted buds. They are never happy, jolly, prosperous, blooming individuals. Mostly after years of practice in spiritualism, they are like the spirits. They die out. They go into a state of being pale and weak and wretched and I don't know what. They fall. It's the fallen angel. They transfer consciously a spiritual status of man into a material status of man. It's a falling. And usually they drop and fall, which doesn't mean that I have noticed that spirits and ghosts and spirits are usually good. They are very seldom evil. Recently there were a lot of incidents in one of our leading papers as a collection of experience with ghosts. And they have been afterwards analyzed by Professor Jung, you know, the big psychologist. And when one is reading all those stories about ghosts, you see what that happened. They always were jolly good ghosts. Not one incident they did something evil. They always either were neutral or they did something good. See? And with spirits, usually it's the same thing. They are usually good. I remember Somebody told me who was very interested in spiritualism during the First World War in Paris. And when the news from the front came in, which were rather depressing and sad, and I don't know what, for the Allies, that person went to a spiritualistic meeting and they were all downcast, and so they said, well, we will ask the spirits what to do and so on. And so the seance began, and after a while they came into contact with an Italian circus clown. And he entertained the whole crowd for a whole evening, and when the seance was finished, they all were jolly and happy. That always impressed me. So you see, one must see the difference really between the system itself and the people. The system itself is pernicious in tendency. And she speaks here of it as a purgatory, you see, where you don't say purgatory? Spiritism consigns the so-called dead to a state resembling that of blighted buds. That's what one usually sees after a while. People look like blighted buds. To a wretched purgatory, where the chances of the departed for improvement narrow into nothing. You see, where the chances for improvement narrow into nothing. You have always that turning back, that going back. And they return to their old standpoint of matter. It's just the contrary of spiritualization. Spiritualists hope to be able to spiritualize through communion with spirits. But what comes out of it is usually that blighted bud, the return to the old standpoint of matter. He shows in this seventh subject that spiritualism really leads itself ad absurdum. You say ad absurdum? That it, because it has no plan, no divine plan. You see, the moment there is no divine plan, any effort and any ology or ism always leads ad absurdum. It's contradictory in itself, whereas spirit's plan always has a telefinalistic plan. Spirit's plan is always directed to a final fulfillment and uses every circumstance to draw anything towards perfection. So, if we would go through the subtones of this seventh subject, we would either see on one side the plan of spiritualism. You can see that what the plan of spiritualism is, and on the other side what the plan of the science of spirit is. The plan of spiritualism, which is shown here, is as mind, that it wants to show, to try to prolong the illusion of a material state, of a so-called mind fettered by matter. See, spiritualism wants to prolong that mind being fettered by matter. That if somebody really dies and is freed from a body, they try to clothe it again with material investitures, to have it tangible and to have it back in a material form. That's why the spirits appear in the same form or in the same language or with the same signature, with the same writing, with the same mannerism and so on. They appear as before. It's a return. It's trying to prolong really a state out of which we should go out. We should try to free ourselves from the belief that mind is in matter. But spiritualism tries to prolong that status. Then the second is that the plan of spiritualism is always to return to the old condition of matter. Instead of, like, the signs of spirit to go towards spirit, It's always that wretched purgatory which calls everybody back to the old standpoint of matter. Then in the third subtone, on the other side of the page, she shows all the deflections of mortal mind. Instead of showing the pure identities of the realities of mind, she shows how through spiritualism, through that belief of spirit in matter, of mind in matter, and so on, we get all the deformations of materiality. Instead of true identities, of perfect identities, we get always deformed identities. That's why a materialistic life view always deforms our character, or deforms our body, or deforms our progeny. We always get the deformation instead of a perfect status of existence. Then, in principle, we see that the plan of spiritualism is really to accept the communications gathered from ignorance as oracles. It's there where the interpretations of ignorance are taken as communications from the one great intelligence. We take them as oracles from another world, and yet they are only communications gathered from our own ignorance, because in spiritualistic seances we only can perceive what we have in our mind. That's quite true. Just as in Christian Science we can only perceive what we have in our mind. If our mind is directed to the one mind, we'll be filled with the revelations of the divine mind. In spiritualism, if our mind is directed towards mind in matter and to a specific limited mind in matter, we can only perceive that mind in matter. And the absurdity, therefore, is that then our own mind and the communications of our own mind, the realm and the range of our own mind, then are taken as if they were communication from the other world, from the divine mind. That's the absurdity of it. And the further absurdity of it is that spiritualism, in the subtone of life, wants to deny the omnipotence of spirit and to destroy the majesty of spirit. It's the destructive element, that which denies. That's life always is positive, always constructive, whereas spiritualism would deny the one, the truth that there is one spirit. And finally, she shows that the plan of spiritualism is that spirit communicates through material effects and through material agents. That, whereas, taking it positively, that whole last subject from the standpoint of Christian Science, we get a wonderful feeling about spirit. Namely, it is as if she would show here that love is working out its plan anyhow. That love is working out its plan anyway, and that in spite of spiritualism. Just as we have to see that matter demonstrates itself in spite of that spirit demonstrates itself in spite of matter, that health demonstrates itself in spite of body. So we have also to see that the infinite plan of the ordered unfoldment with a telefinalistic plan of that love, that is working itself out in spite of spiritualistic views in us. That love, therefore, has again the force and the drive that it wants us to save from spiritualism, and the hour we don't know, but, she says, but the Father knows it. He knows how. Therefore, we have that comforting feeling that love's mind knows how to save us from spiritualism. Then in spirit she shows that progress will outgrow material spiritualism anyhow. that progress, spiritualization, because spirit is progress, the plane of spirit will therefore work to that we outgrow spiritualism anyhow. Then in soul she shows that the unnatural deflections of mortal mind are anyhow not the realities of the divine mind. That in principle that spiritualistic oracles are anyhow absurd, so we don't have to listen to them or take them, are they true or are they half true or what is about them. They are anyhow not truth, because the only thing that speaks is principle. Spirits can't speak. That's an invention of the human mind. And the inventions of the human mind are real to the human mind, but they are not real in the sense of reality. And so she shows that in life that spirit is anyhow omnipresent, therefore needs no method of transmission. That in truth she says that spirit is anyhow omnipotent, therefore it needs no power from no material agents to manifest itself. And lastly she says spirit blesses anyhow everybody. Spirit blesses everybody. Anyhow spirit is anyhow all blessing. Spirit blesses man, but man cannot tell whence it comes. The spirit of God flows where it wants. Sorry, couldn't get it. But you know what I mean, it's a quotation from the Bible. And says, that's beautiful, you see, it's independent of mortal mind, it's independent on the human testimony. The spirit blesses anyway and anyhow. By it the sick are healed, the sorrowing are comforted, and the sinning are reborn. These are the effects of one universal God, good, see. And so we get that big sense that in love's plane, spirit is blessing us anyhow, in spite of spiritualism.